portfolio report, Lisa Bennett. Did I say that right?
Alicia.
Alicia. Oh, okay.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Members of Council. Alicia is our portfolio manager for Bank of America. It's about $4.4 million, and she's going to give a report on that tonight. I was going to read her bio, but I think if I did, her cheeks would get red because I kind of enhanced it. No, that's a joke. I'm just kidding. That's her real bio. Anyway, so here's Alicia.
I'm getting used to this, so thank you for having me. I will make it intentionally quick, but I don't want to brush over anything that somebody has questions on. So if there's something that you want to go back to, I'll finish with questions, but I certainly don't want to take a lot of your time tonight. So what I'd like to do is start with an economic update, how that economic update affects your portfolio, the risks that you face in this portfolio, as well as, you know, what we do to counteract those risks, walk through the portfolio, and then the performance of the portfolio. And if you'll notice in the back of the handout, there's an extensive presentation on fixed income and just interest rate graphs, and I'm certainly not going to worry with walking through all the charts, but it's a good reference on different interactions. So if you are interested to go through and kind of take a look at those, if there's any of those charts that you'd like a further explanation of, I'd be happy to go back. And I'll refer to a couple of them as they impact your portfolio. But essentially on the economic update, 2010 has been a very difficult year for all markets, equity and fixed income alike. As of the close today, the S&P is still for the year, even after being up 4% in August. We started the year expecting a V-shaped recovery in the economy, as we had seen a V-shaped recovery in the markets in 2009, because that market tends to lead the economy. And the reality of it is we have seen that V-shaped recovery in manufacturing, in activity, in trucking. And trucking tends to be one of the most highly correlated variables to GDP growth. And so all of those variables are where they should be in a V-shaped formation, except the only piece that we're missing is the consumer. Obviously, with high unemployment and not so healthy, not so confident consumer, they're not making a contribution to the economy. So normally, we would see an 8% growth rate after the recession that we have been through, but we're looking at maybe 3.5% growth for 2010. But one of the biggest things that gets overlooked is that we're shifting from a U.S.-centric economy to a global economy, where we may only contribute 3%. Europe isn't going to contribute virtually maybe 2% to the world GDP growth. Japan, no contribution. But the emerging markets are now contributing 6 to 9% of that global GDP growth, which we hadn't taken into consideration. And from a U.S. standpoint, we've got our U.S. multinational companies that are taking advantage of that. Because if we look at earnings on the S&P, an average of about 40% of those earnings are coming from overseas sources. So, all in all, with that being said, we expect to finish the year on a positive note for the markets. We do face an awful lot of headwinds for fixed income and in growth there. You've got the crisis in Europe, which has put a lot of fear in the markets, and the economic data is decelerating. So all of those things have kind of pushed out the target. When the economy starts to heat up, that's when the risk of interest rate rising is present. And that's probably the biggest risk to your portfolio, because as interest rates rise, bond values go down. But with all the economic news continuing to be less than positive, it pushes that point further out in the future. When I was here last, we said, gosh, all right, probably 18 months before we'll see a hike in interest rates. That keeps getting pushed further and further out. We're still looking at another 18 months to 2 years, because obviously we don't have a healthy economy, and so any rise in interest rates would dampen those prospects. So given the global economy, that is pushed a little further out in the future. But as that pertains to the risks that you face in this portfolio are interest rate risk, obviously, because we're at historically low rates, and your reinvestment risk, because as your bonds come due, we have to reinvest them at the lower interest rates. Although we keep a very short maturity, there's still that reinvestment risk. Credit risk, we you know, do the best we can to eliminate it because we always stick to the highest quality vehicles. So credit risk is not an issue here, but purchasing power risk is a risk that we face because as we've got very, very low income rates, and eventually inflation will kick in. You know, we're spending a lot of money and you know, an expectation again keeps getting pushed further out in the future. But purchasing power risk is a real risk to this portfolio. So I'll talk a little bit more about how we've addressed that. If you flip to tab two, it gives you the snapshot of the overall portfolio. So value as of September 1st, which was last week, 4.5 is the market value of it. We've had some appreciation in the portfolio along with the interest rate because the value of our treasuries have come up, and we've also invested in TIPS, which is another just a play on treasuries. We'll talk about that a little bit more. So we've got some appreciation of about $134,000 in the portfolio, along with an income of about $139,000 annually, which is a yield of 3% currently. And then the next page gives you a breakdown of, you know, what that is made up of. U.S. government bonds, U.S. agency bonds, and then the pooled investments are mutual funds that contain variations of those kinds of securities, and also an exchange-traded fund that is TIPS, that are inflation-adjusted treasuries. And that's been something that we've done in the past year, and it's worked out well, and I think will continue to work out well for us, because normally we get a treasury and we just lock it in for whatever rate it's gonna pay, and then it matures and we get our money back. In the TIPS, there's an inflation factor on that, so it takes the principal, applies whatever the inflation rate is, although inflation right now isn't as high as I would expect to see it in a couple of years. They inflate that principal amount by the inflation and then apply the coupon rate. So you get some appreciation in value, which protects your purchasing power to some degree, you know, within the constraints of this portfolio. The next page gives you the breakdown of our individual bonds are all AAA rated, and then the pooled investments break down individual bonds 57% to pooled investments 42%. And then also on the next page is our maturity ladder. So we have a lot of our bonds coming due in 2010. We've got about 400,000 coming due October 15th up for reinvestment. And I would say at this point, those will go back into individual issues, whether they be treasuries or federal agency bonds, depending on what it looks like at the time. And unfortunately, things are moving more quickly now in the fixed income than they traditionally do. But so that's our ladder. And that's how we combat as much as possible reinvestment risk, is we have a ladder of maturity. So instead of buying a 1 year, as those come due, we don't have to buy another 1 year. We can go out and buy a 5 year bond and get a higher rate. And we still have liquidity because next year each bond is coming due. So that's just our strategy around defending against reinvestment risk and getting the best interest rate you possibly can given the environment. The next one is another graph on pools to AAA. The next page is the specific ladder, how much we have coming due in 2010. So 400 of that's coming due in October, the other 200,000 comes due in December. And we'll likely fill in those places on the curve. And one of those graphs in the back of the appendix kind of shows the yield curve and where is that fine point on the yield curve. Because as a money manager, that's the best that we can do in this portfolio for you, is to be on the best place on the curve that we possibly can, given the environment. We can diversify as much as possible and utilize some of those other, you know, like the TIPS, to kind of offset some of those risk factors and combine all of those and try to maximize that high quality space. And so then this is the whole portfolio broken down. We're sitting on a little bit of cash. And again, one of the things that I always want to say of Rust Up is there a need for cash upcoming? And as you're heading into budget cycles and talking to Mike, that, you know, we've got plenty of cash on hand for anything that's coming up, because obviously we don't want to have to pull money out of it unexpectedly to meet a cash draw. So as we go through the list of holdings, the Federal Securities Fund is a liquidity fund. It's got a one-day liquidity. You can sell it. It's a combination of federal securities, the TIPS, again, the treasuries with an inflation factor that plays into it, which has served us really, really well, and I think will continue to for probably the next couple of years. PIMCO gives us a diversified approach to the treasuries and helps maximize that place on the curve. So. And then the list of individual holdings, and you'll see that the two that are combined coming due October 15th for the next maturity. And then the rest of the list of the individual holdings. And again, I don't want to rush by anything that anybody's got questions on. And then the last page under that tab is our performance. And the performance counts our income, but also the appreciation that we've had on it. And I think that's been our biggest benefit here, is to utilize some of those tools to maximize the current environment. So if we go out, I was trying to look long term on these things. So inception, 57 months. So this account's been with us since 2005. And we measure it against the proper benchmark. So our benchmarks are the treasuries and the agency bonds of the same maturity. And as you can see, you know, there's not a ton of margin for improvement there. With equities, you can kind of broaden that difference much more. But with treasury, so I think we've done very, very well to get at least the best rate of what's available, plus a little tiny bit more, but also managing our environment the best. Does this make sense? So the fixed income is in bold, and then the amount, and then your performance under each time frame, as measured against the appropriate benchmark that are not bolded underneath, so you kind of get a read of how we've done relative to the benchmark. Does anybody have any questions on that part of it? Because obviously this is probably one of the most important pages. Okay, how have we done, and are we doing things correctly?
I have a question on the first chart. Maybe you explain this, but I missed it.
Okay.
I don't often see a market value and then comparing that to total cost. I've never seen that before. What does that mean?
It just means that, so what we invested in a portfolio. So for example, in fixed income, there's not normally as big of a variation, but it means that, so for the example, the TIPS. So if you go back under the holdings, you can say, okay, we bought $702,000 worth of TIPS. It's now worth $745,000. So we've had some appreciation in the value along with the income that's paid there. So that just takes the full value of those pieces, which is actually really important, especially right now, because what happens is when you are trying to invest in a low interest rate environment, in order to get any kind of yield, sometimes you have to pay a premium. And if you have a very short maturity, you lose that premium. Does that make sense? And we've done, I think, a good job of capturing those gains and not having to pay a premium for yield.
Was the difference of total cost and market value supposed to be the estimated income then?
No, it's a different number. It's the actual capital gain on the securities. And then the yield, the estimated income is actually the yield that it pays out that we can quantify. But the gain is just a snapshot of the market value. It could change.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It's a little gray, but.
And one of the reasons that we can do that and gather the gain is that we're not drawing income off of this portfolio. So if this were an income to that portfolio that we really were trying to get the highest yield we possibly could, we would be paying a premium for that yield. But because we have a bit of the luxury that we're just trying to maximize our total return. So we'll pay, and we might not get the highest level of yield, but we're also not giving up any dollars that we're not going to get back. You know, for example, we pay $110 for a treasury, $110,000, and it matures for $100,000, we've lost that $10,000. But we might have made up for it in yield, but the principal's off the table. So, you know, in this portfolio, we'll go with a lower yield to maximize total return. Am I making that clear as mud? Is that okay? So it's, you know, a combination of both of those things that gives us the end portfolio return that is stated on that last page. And like I said, the fixed income monitor in the back of it, there's a couple of pieces here that you know, for example, so page four, and this is the only one that I'll really highlight, but it goes through and it says, okay, a two-year treasury versus a five-year treasury versus a 10-year treasury. Because what happens is when the economy heats up, they raise interest rates, so the 2 years is going to equal the 10-year. So we don't get any more benefit for going out, locking in our money for 10 years than we do for two. So in those cases, we definitely want a 2 year. You know, right now, there's a big spread. We don't get compensated, you know, virtually. We get half of a percentage point on a 2 year treasury, and then we only get about 2.6 on a 10 year treasury, but we have to lock our money up for 10 years. So it's a tough balance getting the return for those. So you can kind of see how those relationships work. Are there any other questions? Are there areas that you want to dive into a little bit more? Things that I can follow up with for you? I wouldn't have had this on the list, and I completely forgot, so next time I'll have it. Okay. Drop it for you, but.
Any questions from council?
Just a comment, for these kind of investments and conservative investments like me, the environment right now is terrible.
No question. on all fronts, you know, it's a tough time, and there's a lot of risks out there. But one of the benefits too, though, is that there was a time when there was a question about the U.S. being the reserve currency. And all the emerging markets were putting money in other currencies. Well, now, with all the trouble in Europe, guess where they'd rather have their money? In U.S. currency, as well as the treasury. You know, part of why we've seen that price go up, because there's much more demand for those high-quality instruments. But you're right, as we head into a rising interest rate environment, there's a risk of, as rates go up, bond prices come down. And so we try to balance that, but again, pushed out a little further in the future.
Well, I'm reading there's no silver bullet, that we're not all of a sudden changing plans and going to this because there's really nothing else to go to that's conservative. And
no, we're as, I would say, as conservative as we can get. And the way that we stay more conservative is by being
Is 3% like something where it's going to be hard to keep obtaining? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's come down a little bit, but it's also, you know, looking at the total return. So if we go back to the performance page, because again, we're not taking income from this portfolio. So we're not seeking the highest yield, we're seeking the best opportunity. And the best opportunity isn't going out and paying a premium for the highest yield. So if we look at 12 months, so our performance over the past 12 months is 5.68%. That income is only a portion of that return. And again, if we were drawing income, or if we have a strategy long term where we're trying to replenish manage some of the cash fund for expenses, you know, and that would be my suggestion, if that need ever arises where you need to replenish your cash, take the income and replenish it, that picture might look a little bit different. But, so there's a, you know, a couple of different components to that. Does that make, it's, you know, never easy, the investing in agencies and treasuries was as dynamic, but it's actually, it's quite dynamic.
Well, thank you, Alicia, for all the work you're doing,
and
we believe we got our money in good hands. So just go out there and make us 5%, and we'll be talking about you like that.
Well said. That's my line.
But thanks again for coming down and sharing with us. And
hey, it's my pleasure, and it's a pleasure to get to know you guys. And thank you for that. Thank you, Mark.
Yes, drive careful. Okay, natural gas discussion. Is it Eamon? Roger? Roger, can I do it?
Yes, here.
Okay.
I told you weren't going to be
here. I didn't think I was going to be here, but my sister drove the voice that my mother was going to be at the funeral tomorrow, so yeah, that's what happened. I'm going to talk about where we are in gas, and then at the end, I'm going to talk about the hard realities of gas. So basically, we all have a sound PowerPoint here, and it's at gas status for Othell and Adams County, because there are other cities in Adams County, but they're not even so fortunate as Othell. Can you give that just a little tweak, just a little bit? Let's see.
You mean the
word?
Yeah, I can. We can.
Let's just go with it, Roger.
Yeah.
I've seen it in a lot better shape than it looked to be. But okay, second slide. History of natural gas. Cascade Natural Gas delivers to Othell, and it was formed in the early 1950s to serve the communities that were bypassed by large natural gas companies. And three guys developed that company. I mean, now serves 90 communities with 230,000 customers. Okay, next one. The Othell and the Port of Othell have been short natural gas since 1986. Remember that. First by a small gate valve, and then in 2000 by a lack of natural gas supply due to infrastructure issues. The first meeting ever with Cascade Natural Gas was Eamon and myself, May 21st, 2007. And we played with those guys, and then we've had a couple other meetings with in here with regional people involved. We sort of got a run around, and I'll talk about that when we get done. Natural gas, a pipeline from Pasco to Four Lakes is 16 inches. The Four Lakes to Spokane is 20 inches. Moses Lake extension is 8. Warden is 4. Port of Othell and Othell are 4. It's delivered by Cascade. The previous Warden is by Vista, and Moses Lake, and those go to Moses Lake, and then Cascade takes over. Lynn is a 2-inch line, and Ritzville is a 2-inch line. That's all good and well, and you say, well, we can fix that. Well, we'll get to the point where we can. Current supplies. Here's the problem. It doesn't matter about the valve or the pipes or anything. Williams Natural Gas mainline pipeline in eastern Washington is 99.7% reserved, and they are not willing to expand. And I had a deal out of Tri-City Herald today where there's out of 7 gas lines proposed, there's only one going to be built, and Williams jumped out of a major one from Stanfield, Oregon, up the gorge to Portland to Sumas. Okay, that's a 36-inch line to cover. Okay, here's some maps, Williams Natural Gas Pipeline, and TransCanada GTN, which is Gas Transmission Line, which was formerly owned by Portland General Electric. Okay, next picture, this is the Cascade. Here's the Moses Lake extension, here's Othell, and actually right next to its Warden, there's Connell, and it doesn't show the others because they don't have 4-inch lines. Next one is TransCanada. And you can see TransCanada is about 20-some miles east of here. And it runs, and it has all kinds of gas and no one to use it. They were going to propose at Starbuck, a gas-fired plant, and they had another one they were going to run to in Preston, and none of those came about. The ones did in Oregon, and that's because they had plenty of gas down there, and SMUD, Sacramento Municipal Utility District, took, there's two generators at Lamb-Weston, Simplot, there's another two generators, there's a couple generators in Wharton. Okay, next one. Here's part of the problem. Status is a new federal law requiring new businesses to pay for costs for increased capacity. We had a plant that wanted to go into the Port of Othello. They wanted natural gas. But if we had the gas capacity, which you don't, and they had to reconstruct the line and maybe put more pumps in there, pump more gas down a 4-inch line, that company would have paid for it all. It was $125 million company with 100 employees. We lost, that's one of about six that we've lost in this area because we had no gas. Open season is a term used, users can option for new gas line capacity. Okay. So the user options for new gas line capacity, then the user must pay to reserve that gas until construction increases the capacity. So that could be 5 years. Next. Open season, the winds or cascade of winds have not as yet provided the cost numbers for reserving this new gas capacity. I've called over there several times, never got an answer. Mickey Patson, who gave us the real answers here in the first meeting, is on long-term medical disability. So I don't know what is serious, but anyhow, I call this other gal. Okay, open season. Here's something that's kind of, you know, your city is very progressive, but here's what's really happening in the real world. Adams County is not interested in open season. Port of Othello was the first one to say, we're not interested in open season. Othello is interested, depending on cost involved. We're going to get down to the end here, and you'll see that maybe there's no options. Issues that can affect the natural gas supplies to the Othello area. Grant County PUD, if they build a gas fired electric plant using gas, and they're not coming off the winds because there's no gas, they have to come off of the gas line, the GTN line, 22 miles to the east. Okay, next. Excessive gas would be available to the system because then they wouldn't need all that gas that is in the current system. And cascade natural gas from that pipeline PUD builds. Okay, now, questions. First, Grant County PUD probably is not going to build that plant at this present time until after at least elections, because there's a logjam on what the commissioners want to do. It is the cheapest way for Grant County to service their power guys, because just to license Quantico Dam, to relicense it, was $800 million. So that's where some of their problems are coming from. And the other one is they sold future contracts and their needs, no one forecasted the needs. The needs came up. They can't get to those contracts. Some of them, I think, come up in 2015, some in 2020. They're staggered, but right now they're out of power. Why are they out of power? Well, drive over to Quincy and take a look at the storage centers. The ones proposed that we proposed for Othello here was 16 megs and 32 megs of power. Big Ben didn't want anything to do it, but business said, we'll try to do it. And but the cost was 5.125 cents per kilowatt hour, and that includes the lines in and substations. I think the other thing is to be blunt. I don't think that the power that we're going to get gas here, and we're not going to get construction. And if Oregon's anything, Williams is taking the easy way out by just saying we're not making money. And unless we get a huge plant that's willing to pay for, I think it's up to $90 million to get increased gas. But if they do that, they still go back to the main line and there's no gas. So the only way we could get gas is get GTN, and I've thought about this, and I kind of need to get an okay, is maybe we should talk to them and maybe they'd run a gas line over here. Because they don't have any gas. All their gas comes from British Columbia and Alberta. But they've got all kinds of it. So, any questions? It's not a very nice picture, Mark.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It seems unnatural is the GTN line, well, you showed it on the map, and if Moses Lake wants that, it kind of goes right through Othello.
Well, it's close to Othello, but it would allow them to put gas to other things in Moses Lake and give us some gas. But that plant that I was talking about that wanted to go to the port, they either went to Pasco, they didn't have any gas. Could they go to Moses Lake? They didn't have any gas. And the problem is, I think Vista has some of these supplies wrapped up because the Mead Pot Works ran off natural gas, and they quit. They sold gas back to other people and made so much money. So did Reynolds, aluminum, all down the Dalles. Kids are aware of that one too. So, any other questions? I think it's going to be a long time before we see gas. There is a thing that may come up, is a company is putting big storage tanks or wants to, but they haven't did a CUP or a CEPA, so I really can't talk about what they're gonna do, but it's a huge amount. But propane gas and natural gas are two different things. And propane is a lot higher than natural gas. So I can't comment on what that would be until we get that. Lauren hasn't got anything, so I can't. It's not public.
Is there any kind of interfering with Cascade Natural Gas to get GTN gas over here?
I think that Cascade might be interested, but I think Cascade, on the other hand, also has long-term agreements with the Williams. And Williams Pipeline is nothing but the old El Paso Pipeline. And this gas is coming out of Utah, Wyoming, wherever, but we have gas over here, but not enough quantities commercial, because they have to build a $1 billion plant that takes out the water, all it, you know, to purify the gas and add the smell to it and all that stuff. So unless there's, you know, 200 or 300 wells over here producing it, it won't happen. That's our closest, probably our closest in the long run.
Yeah, but if Cascade is using their commitment of Williams gas, Williams shouldn't care if Cascade gets just gas distributed from this GTN, should they?
Well, there's a whole bunch of rules of WTC and everything. The same with 20 years in 1986, if the issue had been addressed, at that time, they could build the extra construction and build everybody. So you'd be up $5 maybe on your bill per month. And they could have built it. But today, if they build anything, it won't be against your bill. It'll be against the new companies. And they can't afford it unless it's a PUD. The PUD could afford to burn that and sell its electricity because they're just.
Well, can't the company that wants gas partner with the city, the county, the port district, and all pitch in and pay for this?
You could pay for the increased capacity, but there's no gas unless we go to GTN.
That's the solution. If they're only 20 miles away, I mean, when you said they have gas and don't have a need, and we have need, my ears perk up. It seems like there's the match right there.
Yeah, they have, and the cost is a 1-inch line per mile is $100,000.
1 inch.
1 inch. So 4 inch is $500,000 minimum per mile, and it's 22 miles over. So they kind of get you one way and the other. We actually had Cascade where they were willing to run a main line down to Williams, but then they found out Williams didn't have any gas either. So we're still working on it, and Eamon did a lot of work on this thing, and some of the council people did a lot of work. and we had these big meetings, we had governmental officials and everything. We're not quitting, but the potential is very weak. I'm just saying, it's not resistant, but almost.
Go ahead.
That's it?
Hey, Roger?
Yeah.
I think kind of looking at this situation and what you presented here, I think it gives us a little more fuel. I think it gives us more incentive to put more pressure on the county and the port district. And whole Eastern Washington,
Yeah, Eastern Washington's out of supply.
I can't stop at just Adams County because it's an Eastern Washington problem. And I think we're gonna have to make this thing fly by putting together a whole organization from Eastern Washington and put some pressure on it. If it goes back to what we wanted to present a few years ago at PUD to get into the water supply and the electrical supply and the gas supply, we need to do that. And we need to do it as a group so we can all work together to make it happen.
It's all of the Eastern Washington. Matter of fact, there was a report written in 1972 and one in 1992 that said, hey, the Pacific Northwest, the natural gas. And then right above us is all the gas in the world. It's Sumas and British Columbia. Well, you're absolutely right. We can't quit, but we gotta look at other alternatives because as far as industrial development, unless it is a non-gas-fired operation, we're shafted. We lost five plants. Would have about probably 700 to 800 employees in those five plants over the last 7 years. They're not gas. There's temporary, there's not firm. So they can shut them off anytime. We've had a bad winter. They shut the spigot off. You don't have backup. You shut down. They're not going to go that way.
We're narrowing in the scope for the opportunity for development in this area because we've gone to a lot of effort to have water. Obviously, we cannot support another plant like Simplot that's using 2 million gallons a day, but we've got water available. But now we've narrowed it down where you can have use a little bit of water, but you can't use gas. And that has to be the industry that fits in our area.
I submitted a proposal for, it's about 320 jobs. And that plant, they didn't care about natural gas, they want water. We had water. So I don't know where that's at yet, so I'm not going to go any further. But one of the things that did hurt us is we don't have 215,000 to 300,000 square foot building already existing. So we put it down anyhow because I'd already done a report for another one on supplies of their raw product. They're here substantially. Okay, thank you. If there's no other questions, good question.
Thanks, Roger.
I want to say one more thing while Roger's here. You know, we've got knocked around for being unprogressive, but I still stand, and I think I've said a couple of years ago with the Portland over here, if we find somebody that with the right fit and the commit, I think the city's more than willing to jump and support the infrastructure to that facility.
Absolutely. Eamon's been right on there, and some other people. Have been, it's the most progressive city in Adams County. It's more progressive than the port. And you guys are out looking all the time, and we're sending in stuff, this last one proposal, no one from Ritzville even applied. Lynn raised her hand and said, they got water, but they don't have some sewer and some other things. But the number one choice was Othell because of the water issues. So we continue to do that. This guy's a progressive, and we kind of get into AC/DC a little bit. Some people argue, but the thing is, where's all the growth? It's Othell. And where's all the resources? Othell. We got water, we got power, we got everything. You know, airport.
Except gas.
Yeah. Yeah, but neither does Ritzville or Lynn. Right. 2-inch line don't do it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks again for coming,
Roger.
Yeah, appreciate your work and what you're doing. We do.
Okay, thanks.
So keep it up. Okay, Solid Waste Advisory Committee update. Lauren Wilson?
We'll see.
We'll see? Oh, okay.
on, you know, the status of the county solid waste system, the in our outlooks for the next year. Currently, our rates are indicated, you know, we're at $70 a ton. We charge Lincoln County customers a little bit more when they come into our county. The we've just recently started collecting recyclables. I handed you out a brochure that kind of explains a little bit about what we're trying to do for recycling right now. Customers who come out with, you know, fairly clean separated recyclables, they can actually get a reduced rate. That may or may not help you as a municipality, depending on, you know, how your collection system is set up, whether you're paying the bill or whether, you know, your contractor is, you know, collecting recyclables, et cetera. Who's paying your garbage bill, basically, what it boils down to. Town of Ritzville and Lynn, I'm not familiar with, they both pay their bill, they pay their hauler to pick up, and then they pay their solid waste bill at the transfer station directly to the county. So any waste that, recyclable weight that they can pull out of their waste stream, potentially they could bring it to us for a reduced rate and save them, you know, a few dollars per ton. But the question is, always boils down to, is when you start getting into recycling, you know, it's a double-edged sword. So as they would do that, they're still paying their contractor the same amount of money, and now he's got to run around take twice or pick up two, you know, follow them, you know, two trucks, one right behind the other, like they do in Spokane a little bit. So trying to come up with a way to reduce your solid waste bill in Adams County, especially through recycling, is going to be, it's something that's going to be a major challenge for us in Adams County. As far as our outlook for the next year, we don't see this rate changing into the new year at all. Adams County is poised to have some significant changes in our solid waste program about mid-year next year. Should those transpire, there may be some changes occur in 2012. Prior then, I'm telling all the communities, I wouldn't recommend making any drastic changes to your current systems until we figure out what the results of those, this change will be. So, you know, we don't see your rates, at least from the county standpoint, increasing. Last year there was not a cost, what do you call it, CPI index increase. I don't suspect there will be one this year at all to us. And if there is, my expectations would be that the county would need it for a year until we find out, you know, where our contracts are going to go in 2011. This is basically what you're looking at. Anybody can bring us, of course, individual customers. We have quite a few from Othello here that do bring us out recycled material. You know, we do save money, the county does, when they do that, because we're not paying the full disposal rate for that, which it also enables us to keep our rates constant. Of course, the more communities pull out for recycling, the more, the harder it is for us to then pull recyclables, and thus we're more likely to have to increase our rates, because it won't significantly reduce the amount of volume that's coming through, but it will reduce it enough that, you know, it'll make it tougher for us to do our recycling and recoup monies that way. So it's kind of like I'm saying, it's a double-edged sword that you got to be careful about. Anything else?
So as far as garbage, there's no issue with where to get it taken to get rid of it?
Not currently. I don't foresee. I mean, we're under a long-haul contract, and that current contract will terminate in 2011. Mm-hmm. And we are poised to take advantage of other opportunities in July of 2011 to long-haul. I don't see a significant increase in that process at all in the near future. Should there be an increase, it probably won't be significant, because we're already long hauling it. Our, ourselves for this price, for these fees. Okay. So the worst case scenario, we might have a shorter long haul, you know, in which case, you know, we'll save some money. And what that means to the cities, you know, it may be that the price could come down a little bit. Probably won't come down immediately because we're still making some fixes at the transfer station that we want to continue with. I don't see a situation where your rates from the county standpoint will go up, at least not until 2012. And the outlook for that is it's not likely that they would increase at this point in time. Our volume has been increasing, unlike all the other communities and counties around us. Our volume has actually been increasing because illegal dumping has been decreasing, and the health department's been helping us to enforce that. And with the amount of construction that Othello has going on, it's kept a pretty even stream of waste coming through the transfer station. So it's helped us to be able to not have to enough that we're not increasing staffing levels per se, but just enough that, you know, the increased fees coming in has been able to keep us kind of status quo.
So you don't have a restriction on the amount of garbage that can be hauled to wherever you're taking it, the disposal? Okay.
No restrictions at all.
Okay.
Volume goes up, we'll just truck more okay. Volume.
Good. Any other questions by council?
Where we take it to, is that pretty solid? And if they should falter, is there
a
plan?
It's the biggest solid waste company in the nation. Rabanco was absorbed into Republic Services, which makes it the largest solid waste company in the nation right now. It's bigger than solid waste management. So.
Is the waste management deal still on for the wash tub, or is that off the table?
That's still on the table. That will, we hope to take advantage of some of those opportunities in July of 2011. I'm currently drafting and working on some contracts and things that I have to put in place in order for that to happen. And then, like I say, if by end of June 2011, we'll know if we're going to be successful at that or whether we're going to have a legal battle on our hands, in which case I don't, even if we do, I don't see any change per se in what we're doing. The county has typically only imposed rate increases to our communities at the first of the year, giving you plenty of time to get notice out to your customers and to your hauler. I don't suspect we would do that in a mid-year. We're not hurting so bad that, and the volumes aren't that great that we would need to do that, I don't think. Obviously, I can't speak for county commissioners, but I don't see that being a likelihood. So I guess, you know, whatever this community is planning in the future, my advice to you from a solid waste standpoint is to kind of stand where you are for a while until we see what these new contracts go with the county. Currently, you're in full compliance. I noticed it was put on there as SWAC. You're a fully participating community, and you're, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you're in compliance with the solid waste plan that was incorporated or adopted by all, you know, the city of Othello, the county, and the other communities. So you're doing pretty good.
Down to the little stuff. Who's responsible for this recycling stuff out here?
The ones in the city.
Pardon?
You're doing that as the city.
Okay. And who dumps it?
Who comes and picks it up? In order to stay in compliance with the county solid waste plan, which you operate under, you have to have some form of recycling going on in your community. And you're doing just what the other communities are doing. You know, you're working with your hauler to do that.
Okay, so who picks that up? And is there a schedule that they pick it up or what?
Debbie probably knows more about it than I do.
It's CDSI maintains those, but it's just being used so heavily that they can't keep up with it right now. We're trying to find a new location, and And I've contacted some businesses that are taking advantage of them being there and asked them to get their own containers at their own place. And that would reduce the commercial activity so our citizens could use it more.
It seems like they pick it up whenever the aluminum can thing gets full. In between times, everything else is jammed full.
The cardboard, yes. And one of our commercial businesses are using them where they can have their own container at their commercial businesses themselves.
I have to have a garbage can. You know, I asked you one time, how can I have it, you know, come every 2 weeks, just like I did when I live out in the country? No, city council, city says that you have to have it once a week. Okay. Now, a guy has a business, isn't he required to have some kind of a container that is big enough, you know, that he can take care of his stuff?
A garbage container, yes, but what they're doing is taking their recycling cardboard and filling up those containers there. So we're trying to work with a couple of the different businesses in town.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's one thing that you might, I mean, that cardboard is obviously one of the items that we're recycling at the transfer station. I don't know what you're paying CBSI for, you know, providing that type of a container, but they're, you know, most of the communities are getting it for free under their contract, so it's kind of hard to beat that.
Yeah, we don't get charged for those containers.
Mm-hmm. But the new location is back here. We have a little corner lot that the city has on 3rd and Hamlet back here. That's, we believe, going to be the new location for the recycled bins. That will help reduce, hopefully, these industries or businesses that are taking theirs and jamming it full. The second part of your question is, can we get a more routine schedule of pickup? And we're going to work with CBSI to see if we can do that. Okay. They may not. They base their pickup on the amount of revenue that it's generating. So we'll work with them to see if we can do that. But one of the goals that you said earlier today is to keep the recycle bins from overflowing so it doesn't blow around the city and cause litter and unsightliness. So we'll work towards that end.
Okay. Yeah, so you're off the hook.
Yeah. Well, if you have businesses that are overwhelming your system, then what you need to do is, as a community, discuss that and have your SWAT committee representative kind of bring that up to, maybe we can develop a program for those businesses to be able to bring it out to the transfer station. You know, I mean, there's ways around, you know, overcoming your, I guess, addressing your impact at your drop-off station.
Okay, thank you.
Well, just so there's no misunderstanding, don't they have to pay if they bring it out to the transfer station?
Currently, yes. Doesn't mean that it has to stay that way.
$45 a ton, it was on
your... It's currently at $45 a ton if they bring it out clean. That doesn't mean that a negotiated system can't be developed or considered. And that's something that your SWAT representative can, you know, on behalf of the city can bring up and kick around and, you know, see what can be done. Currently, when we first set up the transfer stations, the idea was we were going to have to be able to hold mass volumes of it to be able to transport it over to the coast in order to make it somewhat profitable for the county to, you know, try and break even. We built those facilities. We have a baler. The issue boils down to at this point is, as there's a major MRF being considered, I don't know if you guys have been reading about that in Spokane, by Waste Management and others, they're kicking that around. If that should open up, then there may be an opportunity in the communities to actually do some recycling that would include plastics and other glass or other things that actually make it worthwhile from a volume standpoint to consider. But right now, as you look at that brochure, I mean, the only thing that's really profitable is paper, cardboard, and, you know, metals and aluminum and, you know, those sorts of things, precious metals. Other than that, there's not much moving unless you can take it to a, you know, the coast. To do that, you just in a heartbeat, you're upside down, so.
All right, Ken.
Yeah, something I might add to what Lauren's saying here, too, is that, you know, we talk about recyclables and we've even thought about the idea of having separate garbage containers for each one of them, you know, as far as individuals are concerned. Well, it does two things. Yeah, it sounds like a good idea, but a lot of times what will happen is, yeah, you might get a little bit of that trickle down as far as each individual taking care of their plastics and their glass and maybe their metal or whatever. But if there's not enough volume of that, the collector will say, the heck with this, and he'll dump it all in one container and ship it all out anyway. But the individual still gets charged for those individual containers of doing that. And then if you do have enough volume to where the contractor is beginning to make a little money on it, he'll collect those himself, recycle them himself, instead of coming out to like Lauren out here at the transfer station. They no longer get that recycling, so that cuts down their amount of revenue, so that'll up your fees. So it's a hard decision to make whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, because whether you help the individual or whether you help the transfer station, or how you look at that situation. Am I right, Lauren?
Yeah, most recycling programs in your communities are, I mean, they're subsidized, you know, through the rest of the solid waste system, until your solid waste system is sufficiently strong enough to absorb that, you know, you're going to lose money, you know, trying to find that balance. But at some point, there will be a balance.
And then we've got one more situation as far as what we're doing now, I think still qualifies us for our recycling program and our grant money and whatnot. You know, there's a little clause in there like that green grant money and whatnot. There's also a portion of that is recyclable. What you're doing with that recyclable money, what we're doing through the transfer station and whatnot, we're making an attempt to do that. So it basically covers that portion.
I forgot to give you a pat on the back. Your schools in Othello are doing a number one job of recycling paper. I mean, every one of them are now participating. In 2010, we're bringing the high school on board. We're doing that. The county's kind of, for lack of better words, we're supporting that system. But it's the right thing to do. The kids are learning something. And to be honest with you, it's one of the only systems like that in this side of the state that I know of. So pat yourselves on the back as far as on behalf of your schools, and they're doing a real good job.
The gentleman in the white has a comment, I think.
May I ask a question? I was the one that negotiated the contract in 1989 with Waste Management and brought them into the county. I did it in Spokane, Washington. I actually have the original contract in my files. I want to ask one question. I've stayed away from solid waste for several years. Back at that time frame, Adams County generated roughly 15,000 tons a year of municipal waste. What is it now?
We're between 16 and 17.
Okay. And at that time frame, I was under an agreement with the Adams County Commissioners to provide free transportation and disposal to the county with a term of the contract. I didn't realize you're going to have this on here tonight. I came on another issue. I found Roger's presentation interesting because I know I'm not much to look at, but if you think of Susan Boyle and what she was able to do, nobody believed her either. But anyway, in 1988, I was at the Spokane City Convention Center, and the people up front said that Glenn Stockwell was the state's number one authority on thermal generation or something. And I had to pinch myself because I wasn't certain if they were talking about me or not. But anyway, there is a method that you could supply additional steam, et cetera. Roger, you're talking about these seven plants or seven projects that you lost out on. There is a method of doing that if you would have an interest in it. And I took a proposal before the Adams County Commissioners in March and April, and they said they were interested, but then at the very last minute, they said they weren't, you know. so I didn't pursue it. But there is a very large opportunity right now. And all I told them in March and April was I would like to help them with the opportunity. You know? I'm too old to put a project together this time frame. I wouldn't live long enough to do it. There's a method of solving your steam problem for processing, if you're interested in it. And I think we could put the original project that I had in 1989 back together and would save the county for the cost in the disposal and transportation, et cetera, for the next 20 years. I'm sorry, I can't hear about something else.
All right. Something the council wants to hear?
Is it just methane gas from a garbage pit?
No.
Okay. I'd like to see it in writing, summary.
Yeah, we could have you, if you want to put something on writing and come and just do a short presentation so we understand what you're talking about, so we get an idea whether that's something we're interested in or not.
Yeah, right now I'm in the process of putting some contracts together. I was going to approach the commissioners one more time. I thought possibly they're waiting for Jeff to be elected or something. I didn't know. It is a kind of a subject that is brings people out of the woodwork. The Bruce landfill, years ago, they gave me the rights to bring 800 tons a day of municipal solid waste to it. If I was given that option again, I'm quite certain that I could put the project back together. And I turned the contract down in 1989 that would have brought the county $12 million. And the reason I turned it down was that DOE was willing to give us, and I have an audio tape about this still, DOE was willing to give us $60 million in grant funds to put in a state facility. So I was waiting for the commissioners to say, sent us the check, but they never did put their hand in there. So there are viable alternatives here. But at my age, I'm not going to beat anyone into submission to try to tell them about it either. I'd be happy to work with you.
Well, we're interested in at least hearing. We don't know. It's hard to know without hearing, so we don't know.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate you coming. Okay, AC/DC contract renewal, Eamon.
Good evening. A lot of what you've heard tonight, the financial situation of the city, some of the contracts, where we're going, is all kind of leading into other discussions and trying to get our minds around where we're at financially with the city. One of the things that drive any city is economic development. And in Adams County, since 2008, the Adams County Development Council has existed. We have two city council members on, Ken Johnson and Ken Kaler, serve on that committee. You have before you an addendum. It's addendum number two. Addendum number one was for 2009. This will be for 2010, 2011. There has been some changes within AC/DC. First of all, at our last discussion about a year ago, the question from the council desk was, who's doing economic development for the county? We've got the county, the city, EDC, AC/DC, Roger Prue, who is doing all that? So I think tonight we can answer that by saying everything has been consolidated at the county, with AC/DC being located here in Pella now. Roger Krug is the temporary director through the end of the year. I don't know if that will continue. That's up to the board at AC/DC. County commissioners have supported that. So the primary economic development engine for the county is now AC/DC. There is really no other entity that does that. The city, we kind of do our own if we get a lead or we get an inquiry, somebody comes to town, We do that, the county kind of does that. But all of the leads from the state go to ACDC. And Roger mentioned, we qualify and meet a lot of the conditions by industry that's looking to relocate or build a business, except a building size. That's almost always our the exclusionary factor in Othello getting a new business, either non-power related or non-water related. So one of the goals for ACDC this year is that we're developing an inventory book that has, for each city and the port districts, an inventory of all existing buildings and their size, power sources, power rates, anything that a business person would be interested in making a decision to locate in Adams County, or in our case, the city of Othello. So we're building these inventory books, that's one of our goals. The other goals, besides board-driven goals, come from the state. And they're primarily business contacts, existing businesses. It's a two-prong goal standard. And one is to contact existing businesses to see if we can help them. Can we help them financially? Can we help them with grant writing? Can we help them with business decisions? Can we find consultants for them? Can we work with them in any way? The second goal is to recruit and try to solicit and attract new businesses to Adams County, and in our case, the city of Othello. So Adams County has requirements from the state to do that. I believe the number of existing contacts is 30. We found ourselves in a position late this last year of having 3 months to do all of the work. We were told most of the year that we were meeting our standards, and once we got a closer look, we were not. However, that's when we brought Roger Krug on board, and Grace from the Chamber also works for ACDC. And between the two of them and a lot of hard work from the board members, we were able to accomplish all the goals of the state in 3 months, which was a major effort on everybody's part. Why do we need to match the state's goals and the standards that they set? Because they fund ACDC about $49,000 a year. So all the funding for ACDC comes from the state, all the member entities like the city of Othello, and our major fundraiser of the year, our annual golf tournament that we had 2 weeks ago, I think it was. So the issue is, will the city council adopt the annual contract with ACDC, which if you consent to that, will be on your agenda next week for any further discussion and for adoption. So with that, are there any questions about Adams County Development Council?
Do you want it on next week's agenda? Okay.
Yeah.
Great. No questions then, I guess.
Thank you.
You did a good job, Anna.
I have a comment in general relative to these organizations coming to us and asking for money, whether it be this organization or tourism money or... What's the organization we give the water guys? We give $6,000 to?
Oh, the Mid-Columbia, it's the Columbia Basin.
Yeah.
Columbia Basin
Development League?
No, they're the water. Maybe it's, I thought it was related to water.
Yeah, it's like $6,000.
Anyway, these people that come and ask for money, I think we should learn a valuable lesson from what happened with the Chamber of Commerce, where they presented us a budget that showed they had all their items funding, and then at the last minute came in and said they didn't have any money and needed $6,000 for fireworks. And I think these people that come in and ask us for money should give us a mission statement, a proposed budget, and their past accomplishments and expenditures over the last annual year. And you know, I was looking, even our church does this. And so I don't think that's big a deal that these people that want our hard-earned tax dollars should present some kind of annual report that substantiates and gives credibility to us giving them money. So I don't know how to do it, but I think we should establish that as a precedent before we start handing out tax dollars.
The ACDC, we do have a annual meeting once a year, first time of the year. We have a budget that's open all the time for anybody to see. I have been a very much stickler on the budget and asked for some certain items for every meeting on how we are doing with our budget and our spending and where it's compared to all the time. We've made some moves the last couple meetings to help our expenses and take control to watch our spending because it is tight. And the state is getting tighter too on how much their reimbursements are going to be going down. They've had to make cuts in the budget, and unfortunately, economic development has been one of the areas that the state has cut back to. And our forecast right now, currently they're giving $49,000, but that could possibly be going down, my understanding, to about $40,000 a year. So we do have a publication that we put out with our budget yearly. We'll be glad to supply them.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea what Mark has there, that we should have these organizations letting us know.
I might
who
totally
they are.
Support the organization, but if they don't supply this number, I'm just done. You know, I'm not giving you money unless I have some brief explanation of where you spend it on, where you're going, and what you're setting out to accomplish. So if I can get three council members to agree with me, you know, we'll just say no, we don't have enough information. If I don't, then I'll stand alone.
So council thinks, should we have those requirements when people come to us looking for money? So we know what they're thinking, what they're going, and why.
Well, I think somewhat with the tourism money, normally that's what takes place. You generally have to have those all in line before you present what you got. I know the chamber kind of screwed up last year on that whole thing totally from the word go, but I think basically the rest of them pretty well put a package together that way. Most of them would.
Seems like to me we saw one of those, didn't we, at the end of the first year? How much they paid out for salaries, how much they paid for office staff, and how much money they paid for, but I haven't seen it this year. I assumed that there was some kind of a shortfall in who was doing the work or something, but that hasn't happened. And I tend to agree with Mark on the fact that when you come to me and say, okay, I want to redo my contract, and we'd like you to pay so much of ahead, okay, show me what you use the money for. You know, if you made 435 contacts at $20 a piece, whatever, you know, at least show me what you did with what the money, and I don't see anything wrong with that.
And I think it ought to go far further than just our money that they're showing what they did with that. It should be the overall package, you know, kind of like what Mark's saying. Just because our money went where it was supposed to go over what happened to the rest of it, was an overall budget.
So, Eamon, why don't you design something like that and bring it back to the council member? Let's look at it. We'll design a little form we hand to people, and we know they're coming to us, and say, this is what we expect at our meeting when you come to present the request. You know what I mean? Like what Mark just had right there, that we'd be expecting to hear.
We can do that. We can see how much of that we can get put together for next Monday night.
Oh, okay.
For this contract on this issue. But we'll do it in a general sense for all applications.
Mm-hmm. Great. Any other questions? Okay. Stormwater discussion, 7th Avenue and Columbia Street. Okay. Oops. So, water retention.
One of the progressive developments in our city is the sagestone developments by Pete Olson. Know that he's completed Sagestone 5, and he has 6 and 7 on the drawing board, and they're being reviewed and should be built, I think I heard, within the next year. I heard that staff say it went there.
Yes, the first phase, yeah.
Yeah, first phase. If we look back when we approved, let's go to the first map. If we look back, the city council, let's say some five was developed. Thank you. The council approved a retention pond. And the retention pond on this map, can you bring it up something?
There you go.
Scroll down.
The council approved a retention pond as a temporary measure for holding stormwater drainage. The idea was it would be temporary until the development built out and they would run all of their stormwater into a closed system or a piping system that would then flow westerly to the depression just to the north side of the overpass that the city purchased in about 2000. As you can see, the retention pond is here, located in 7th and running south. You have Columbia Street running east and west. And then below that, of course, below Columbia Street is Highway 26. The developer came to the city and said, we want to develop Station 6 and Station 7. And to do that, what we want to do is expand this retention pond and make it bigger to hold the stormwater from the two new developments. We took a look at it and said, this was supposed to be temporary anyway, so why don't we ask the developer to put in a closed system now and do away with this, really, it's a kind of a mud bog right now. So I asked the developer to pipe everything to 7 and down to 7. The developer has agreed to do that if the city will run a stormwater pipe from 3rd east to 7th. Now, the reason the developer is asking the city to do that is because this has a great potential to be developed as well as the rest of Columbia Street. Everybody that develops, or any developer that develops this property, and this corner is for sale, by the way, will also look onto this stormwater line. If they do that, they reimburse the city if the city puts in the line from 3rd to 7th. So that's an advantage to both the city and to the developer. We get the storm control system implemented with this project, same storm 6 and 7. The city gets reimbursed in the future. What are the costs of the city? In discussion with Public Works, they indicate that materials for pipeline, I think it was a 24-inch pipe, is $26,000, materials only, and about $10,000 in city labor costs to put this line in. Again, we take that cost and we would come back to you with either a resolution or ordinance, depending on what we're gonna do, and implement a latecomer agreement that goes on in perpetuity or forever with the city. Contractors, remember, if they put in something, they have a latecomer agreement, it only goes out 15 years. But the city can collect forever, so whenever this development in, or this is further developed south of Columbia, the city will get its money back with the interest rate at the time. So we're asking the city and council if you would authorize the expenditure of about $36,000 to put in storm piping from 3rd to 7th. The developer would put station on 5, 6, and 7, eliminate the retention pond, and put in the closed system to 7th, and then south to Columbia Street. Questions?
So this is something we want to do this year? Is that what we're talking about?
I'm sorry?
Something we're doing this year?
Yes.
In this budget?
Okay. Yes. In fact, they're waiting for a decision from the council. They started already not doing the intention pond of the storm drainage, but they're wanting to do it as soon as the council gives authority.
What's happening to all that wastewater now in that section of town?
This here?
No, all the houses.
Yeah, over there, here.
Yeah.
This currently has some piping. It's not complete, but if you drive down 7th, you'll see the open ditch there. And a lot of this natural drainage goes from east to west. That's why the depression area was bought in 2000. So now it naturally drains. However, it does pond, as Councilmember Kaler and I talked about earlier today, it does pond over at 1st and then at Broadway.
if we pipe this, we're not going to eliminate that. What we are going to do is eliminate increasing that problem, because the piping from Columbia goes south at the east side of Burger King, goes south to 26, and then west to the Depression. So it's all been in the works for many years. We're just now connecting it all up. But this is not fully connected yet.
I don't understand the Depression.
There's a Depression area. It's a big hole in the ground. It's full of cattails if you go look at it right now.
By the cherry
plant
down there.
Just the north side.
Oh, okay. Well, that's our wastewater pond.
Yeah.
No, stormwater.
Stormwater. Stormwater pond, my bad.
Yeah, it's a stormwater pond. Now, it's interesting you should ask the question, because most cities are now going toward the stormwater utility, and we'll be looking at that in the near future.
I don't know. You know, I was just in Spokane today, and the brand new WSU campus there, their parking lot all runs to a little pond of grass between their parking lot and the sidewalk. They're
now,
not treating it.
Are required to do that. But we're talking the residential area. Right, that's why the fenced area by Walmart is there. That's a stormwater retention pond.
Right. I had thought, I'm confused, because I had thought we already did something there by Burger King, putting in lines and...
We put in some water lines.
Water lines,
right.
Yeah.
We did.
And we tied that little loop in the water.
That's
no,
right.
No, I thought we did some...
Fire suppression.
I thought we did some stormwater stuff to get it under the road to get
that,
to our pond.
That was by Burger King, south 226. We did some work there.
And that was stormwater?
Yes.
So again, I'm confused how all that water from those houses there get to our retention pond for stormwater.
It's all surface water. It all flows naturally on the surface.
To where?
It all flows east to west, and eventually ends up to the holding pond of the city.
So there's a line somewhere it goes to under the ground, not to our retention pond.
There is a line. But it's not completed coming west to east. And that's what we're doing now, is connecting the dots. But there is a stormwater backup problem at First and at Broadway, because of what you're identifying, is the water from here doesn't get there. It tries to get there, but our piping system isn't connected yet.
Okay, so when you talk about First and Broadway, like they intersect, they don't intersect. What's the problem at First and Broadway?
Well, Columbia and First and Broadway, there's ponding there. Every heavy rain, we have ponding there.
Well, just because the grates don't take it all.
That's right, that's right.
You get a bubble. You get to First Street, and it'll bubble up and make a big catch basin in there, and it'll basically run over into Broadway, but it does the same thing. And it'll basically, if it gets too full, it runs into Boersma's low parking lot.
Right, okay.
Place. And if it gets full enough, it'll run out the doors, go to the other side, and get down the pond.
And our piping is on the backside of Boersma. And
right.
We have had discussions for several years with him about the road on the north side of his property, which will have that piece of pipe we need from the west side of Boersma over to Broadway.
So what happens? It goes to Third. Is it Third? Are you connecting some underground pipe that takes it out of the retention pond?
No, the underground pipe is on the east side of Burger King. So it's between Second and Third.
So there's already a pipe up to Third.
Yes.
So we want this on the agenda for Monday?
Yeah.
Discuss it more? Okay.
So the question will be, will the city expand the $36,000 to put the piping in and implement a latecomer agreement?
Okay.
The latecomer agreement would be good. That's what we currently have on the water line that we have.
Yes, that's right. We did. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Eamon. trespass program. Steve? Chief?
Apply to churches and schools also?
Any institution that has closed hours. The school, they may not want to participate because they allow people to use their school grounds after hours. So this definitely has to be set hours where you're actually closed. And it's very clear and evident that you're closed. Mr. Johnson's business would be a prime example. He closes at 5 or 6 whatever time he gets done. He has posted hours. Participates, anybody hanging out on his property after closing can be stopped. We find out what they're doing.
When could we sign up?
I'm here to tell you that tonight, we don't have to pass a law or an ordinance. This is just a program that we're instituting. It's available now. I've already talked to some other business owners and they're ready to sign up as well. So I think it's a good program. I think it'll be very beneficial to our business owners, and I think it will help in the long run in doing the kinds of things that we're trying to do, which is prevent a lot of vandalism and a lot of crime.
Just to clarify, what is it that prevents you from doing that now?
Because we don't control people's property. So now, with the existence, say Chris or Bernie, they caught somebody at 2 o'clock in the morning skulking around their business, they would call us. and then we would come over there, and they would say, yes, I'm this property owner, this person's trespassing, and I want them dealt with according to the law. Well, that's what we have to do now. But if they sign this and post their property, they're already telling us that. They don't even have to be involved in talking to them. We just take that action.
But is the police officers that are out patrolling, if they saw somebody out on the properties as it is now, they wouldn't go up and stop them?
Not necessarily. Everything a police officer does is predicated on reasonable suspicion. Reasonable suspicion that a person is about to, has committed, or is committing a crime. So a person standing in a parking lot at 10 o'clock at night, that may not give you reasonable cause or reasonable suspicion to stop that person. I might be able to walk up and say, hey, how are you doing tonight? And he could say, I'm doing fine, I'm minding my own business, pound sand. I'd say, thank you very much, pound in sand, and I leave. If this person has signed up for this trespassing program, and this person is on private property, he could say, well, I'm minding my own business, pound sand, and I could say, no, I'm sorry, you're violating the law. You pound sand, tell me who you are and what you're doing. Okay?
That clarified it. Thank you.
A couple quick ones here. Suppose you're a business owner and you've got a few employees, and most of the time you're closed. But yet you come in at a late hour or something, moving something from one place to the other or whatever, and patrolman comes by, he sees this happening. What's to keep him from arresting that person for trespassing?
Well, he's going to stop and talk to the person, find out why he's there. Yeah. And if the guy says, well, yeah, I'm actually an employee here, and geez, we had a water line break and the alarm went off, so I'm down here to repair it. Well, where's your keys? Got keys, got an ID card? Oh, you're good to go. See you later. Thank you very much for your cooperation.
Just don't want that to get abused.
Our officers have full discretion to make an arrest or not make an arrest based on circumstances, and they all use pretty good common sense to make those applications. So
they're also
really confident that they can do the right thing and what to
do. They also have a neat program where they shake doors at the businesses. Mm-hmm. And they have a list of phone calls. I've been down to our business a few times at 1 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, they'll call, they have a list of the business, you know, who to call, and it goes down the list. And, you know, it's been, I'm really impressed with that, shaking the door. They leave a little card showing that they've been there, what they found, what time they were there, the officer, you know, that's big. That lets you know they're with you, helping you. And then when we found the doors open, they go in first, and I'm with them. Scour the whole building.
Behind them.
You know. So we scour that whole building, and when I'm comfortable, they say, thank you. I lock the door, and away we go again. So, but that's a neat function for our business to enjoy. So, seeing that happen. So.
Well, again, I think it's going to be a very successful project and program. And again, you know, this is going to do a lot to open doors and create partnerships in our community, and which is a big thing, big communication issue. So trucking companies are hit all the time. It's stereos, speakers, anything stolen out of trucks. Well, if they close at a certain time, then they can put these signs up and we'll be watching, and people riding a bicycle across there or whatever will stop.
Is how would we, a business, initiate this? Is there a brochure or?
We have a brochure. It's attached. Should have been attached to the thing. The brochure is here. It explains the program. And then all they have to do is they just have to sign an authorization, which says that they're giving us the authority to intervene on their behalf on their property during closed hours, and that they have the authority to do that control over the property. And then we give them a protocol, a signposting protocol that tells them what and how they should post and get their property signed. And then we also give them one outlet for these signs. The sign is just like this. It's very heavy duty, lasts a long time. These signs are through the Main Street signs are about $33 a piece. The cost is borne by the business.
Will you assist, come out, will one of the officers come out and assist as to where the placement should be?
Certainly.
we'll help out, do whatever we can to help, give them some pointers and some information. But our sign protocol posted is pretty clear. So.
Does it work at all for individuals?
As far as a house?
Yeah, does it make sense or is that?
You can post your property, no trespassing anytime you want, and then if anybody was on your private property that you knew about, you call us.
Okay.
I'm not too sure. This program, I spoke at length to Jim Richard, made sure that we were good with our legal department. I would have to talk to him how that would translate to a private residence, and if it would. Because of course, private residence, we can't, you know, we'd be stopping your dinner guests.
Right.
We'd probably be putting the damper on a lot of rolls. All kinds of things. So that would be a little bit harder, as when you have the curtilage and perimeters that are set up that you know are off limits to people during certain hours, then it's much easier. That would be my guess. Any other questions?
Well, thanks, Chief Donica.
Okay.
Sounds neat.
All the
that's good.
All paperwork will be in dispatch. Or you can come to my office personally and I'll give you
this. Or after meeting.
Yeah. Interesting note for Mr. Wilson. In 1974, they had a bomb scare at Scutney Spring. So they ran all the kids out. Called the police department, fire department. They came up and parked in the parking lots and sent the teachers back into the building to see if they could find anything wrong.
Sweet.
Yes. Woo! Kids are all standing out there, yes. See, you get to go in second. We had to go in first.
Yeah. Glenn Stockwell here. He's president of Washington State Economic Development Corp. Would like to address us for 5 minutes. We'll give you 5 minutes, Glenn, unless questions go way beyond that.
Okay, well, I didn't get my letter back.
Oh.
So I'm kind of running blind.
Oh. Deb, you got a letter to give him?
I'm sorry.
Where did I get the letter? Oh, I just have the original. Did it passed out? Everybody have a letter? Here, Glenn, if you want to come up, you can. Oh, okay. I have your original, too, I guess.
I'm here tonight to talk to you about something that trying to get to the 11th congressional year. This is just a starting point here, so we introduce each other. So my name is Glenn Stockwell from Flintville. I've lived in the county for 33 years. So. And what I'm trying to develop with the 11th congressional leaders is the Washington State Green Team. And I'm trying to work with 12 people because I've worked with public before. It's kind of chaotic when you have a whole room. It's easier to focus on one small group. And so since you probably read this, you'll take time to read it. What I think we are setting here in this time frame of history is we have a unique opportunity in the state of Washington. And I've promoted the final construction of the Columbia Basin Project, the East Side Canal, for several years. But there's several important issues that have taken place now over the last 2.5 years that will make it real possible for us to do it. And one of those issues is that the siphon that's over in Weber Coulee between, on I-90 there, I don't know if you know where that's at, the siphon that they're working on over there will be able to increase the flow into the main canal channel. We'll be able to double the flow going into it. For all these years that we've had this project at the Grand Coulee, the pumps have always been there. All they had to do was turn the pumps on, it would have had enough pressure to pressurize the entire little over a million acres. With the Weber Coulee siphon in this next year, a lot of people who have lived in the county don't realize it, but when they first designed this project years ago, there was supposed to be a lake between Warden and Lynn. And there's a spillway over there, and it's been sitting vacant now for several decades. And in 2005, I met with Vivian Loomis, and we had put that on the final draft EIS location for reservoir. And it's one of the final locations that is in the final EIS now. What I think we should do as a county is we should take people like Roger, and I know he's worked on it with Rudy and the commissioners and stuff, but I think what Odello could do is to have an assembly of all the economic development people in Eastern Washington. There's been no greater economic development than the first half of the Columbia Basin project. I was born in 1950. I've seen pictures of Othello in 1950, and you can see the growth, you know. I watched the entire area grow. And I think we are at a unique time frame in history, but at the Adams County Farm Bureau meeting they had in July 10th, and we were talking there, Mike Paulson, Catherine Morris Rogers' aide, told me that I was going in the right direction. I think that the Washington State Democrats should help lead the way on this proposal. And I think what they need to do is form a bipartisan group. We have 8 Democrats and 3 Republicans. And I see Ken over there smiling. But anyway, I know it would be easier to count, hold the ocean back and get both parties to work together. I realize that. But I think if we demanded it of our congressional leaders to get together and bring this project to President Obama's table, I think the timing is correct. And I think that President Obama is looking for a project that he could have in place by 2012. And it would surprise you how fast we could put in a dam if we would fast-track our approach, and President Obama would take the same role that Roosevelt did when he put the project in years ago. And I believe that if we were to fast-track the project, we could have a large reservoir in the Lynn Warden Coulee. And I believe by bringing President Obama on board, he would be able to bring the force of his office to the project. And I think that we can put this project in. And without getting into certain subjects, I guess I've been told when I was at Spokane City Council, I'm not supposed to talk about it, so I won't do that. But I believe that I can show you a method of funding this project. In 1988, we had a meeting over in Moses Lake, and Gary Locke came very close to finding $2 billion to put this project in. And I was at the meeting, and I used to be a member of the Columbia Basin Development League. And after that time frame, within a matter of 2 to 3 years, everyone in the league just basically threw their hands up. They thought it was over with. You know, they couldn't find any money. I offered to Christine Gregoire, I offered to show her where there were existing revenues that would pay for this. But under the stipulation that I wanted her to develop non-revocable agricultural trust accounts where the monies would be placed into these trust accounts. And this is what Eisenhower did years ago when he built the freeways and stuff. They put these trust accounts in. It's been used for decades. And the reason I wanted that to be done is that Christine Gregoire has a real habit of taking monies and throwing them into the general fund, and 98% of all those funds end up over in Western Washington, you know. And I don't believe that that's the correct way to use money. So what I'm asking you get the city council to do is consider drafting a letter of support and asking Kathy McMorris Rogers, Doc Hastings, and the other congressional leaders to form a bipartisan group and take this project to President Obama, requesting that he put it on his agenda for his public works agenda. and I really believe it will work. Years ago, when you're talking about solid waste, I brought a book here. And my book was when I was bringing the solid waste project to Adams County years ago. And in the book, you'll see letters from Lynn, Ritzville, the Othello Port District, all in support of what it was I was doing at the time. And what it does is it sends a clear and audible signal to the people, to the congressional leaders, that our community leaders want us to do this. And that's the aid that it does. A lot of politicians, if I was to become one, I wouldn't really take it on as a job, as a profession. But some of these people plan on making a profession out of these political careers, and it's hard to get them to act on subjects unless they have a clear signal from the municipalities and from the public that they're acting on their behalf.
Glenn, what cities have you gone to so far?
Pardon me?
What cities have you gone to? You said Spokane.
Representative. I've been to Spokane. I'm going to be going down to the Tri-Cities. I'm going to be at the Paso Chamber of Commerce on next Monday. I've drafted a letter. Here's a copy of it. Sorry. I was going to run over early and have copies made, but by the time I got here.
Thank you.
I'm going to be going before the Lynn City Council. I'm going to be going through other county governments to get letters of support. And I believe it will actually work. So I'd like for you to consider drafting a letter that you're comfortable with.
So have you met with, what is the one that's in our area?
I'm sorry?
The one that's working hard at getting this water in here? What are they called? Ace?
The Columbia Basin
Development. Wama? Is that what it is? No?
Clea, I think he had it. Columbia Basin Development League.
Oh, yeah. Columbia Basin Development League. Have you visited with them yet? Or?
No, I used to be a member. I haven't gotten to that level yet. I want to work with the municipalities. The Columbia Basin Development League, in 2001, on September 13th, I was in a meeting in the Moses Lake with Frank Schott and some other people about putting in the project at that time frame. There's been a large educational pool, and I believe that Frank Schott and a lot of these people would work very aggressively about bringing this project in. I believe in my heart and soul that I disagree with some of the people that go to Olympia. The Democrats are hammered that they have overspent, and in some ways they have. No doubt they have. I'm a firm believer you can't give a politician enough money. But on the other side of the coin, the Republicans always want to cut. Well, in business, both of those options are about useful approaches. But the other third approach is the one that I've always endorsed, is going out and getting new revenues and to balance the books and to cure the problems. And I think that's what we would be doing here. And in 2009, I made two trips to Washington, D.C. I took the proposal to the Patty Murray, Senator Cantwell, and to Catherine Morris Rogers and other congressional leaders. And we have a lot of problems in the United States. Yeah. And I used to fight when I was younger. And when you crawl in the ring and you have to look someone in the eye and you know you're going to start beating on each other, you look at life a little differently. When I get back to Washington, D.C., and you meet these young people, you can see the fear in their eyes. They don't know exactly what they're doing. And I think what we could do here is aid the congressional leaders with the support showing that Othello, Lynn, Ritzville, Spokane, I'm going to be down in the Tri-Cities asking them to form a way to letter also.
Yeah, because I don't want to cut in here because it's getting rather long for us. I guess I'd like to see you meet with the organization that's been doing this for so long. You know what I mean? and really get them on board, because we've been supporting them. We've been writing letters of support for them. We've been, you know, trying to encouraging them to keep going, you know, to get this water in and stuff like that. And I would not want them to think we did a backdoor approach on.
Yeah, no, I don't think
that. You know, that's why I'm asking you to, what's that?
I was in a forum on the 30th of August with Joe Schmick and down at the Tri-City Herald. And Joe openly agreed and discussed at length of what this would do to benefit Eastern Washington.
Hmm? Oh, yeah, if you got it through, it'd be a great benefit. There's no doubt about that. So, but to me, they've got the state support. They've got state money and federal money. And that would be a way to really help push this thing along, was to get them rolling too. You know, because we more or less trust them, I guess you'd put it. You know, we've trusted them with our money and stuff over the years. And you know, that's what I'd like to see, approach it that way also. And then, you know, have the two of you come down like that. I would think that you'd have a lot of, I don't know how the council feels about this, but, you know, I like what you're doing here and the thought of fast-tracking it and getting it going, so.
Well, my experience has been, this is the reason I took this on in 2009. I've lived in Adams County for 33 years. When I came here, I was a younger man, okay? And I used to watch these people, or Rex Lyle, and a lot of people at Columbia Basin Development League, go out and they would fight for this project year after year after year after year. And eventually I started noticing that a lot of those people that were fighting for the project were all ending up in the cemetery. And it seems to me, my dad used to always believe that there were windows of opportunity in history. And I found that my dad was right on a lot of things in life. And I think that we're looking at a window of opportunity here, and if you don't walk through the window at the correct time frame, if you walk too late, it'll be closed. Right now we have a window of 2 years while President Obama is in office. And I think that whatever you think about it, good, bad, or indifferent, we all have those feelings about what's going on. But right now is the time frame to approach it very aggressively. And I think that, you know, we should go about it in this method. I succeeded years ago because I took this method and I think it's the correct method. So, but I will take your approach if that's what you want me to do. I'm not saying no to you.
Yeah, I don't know. How's council feel, I guess? Any comments? Questions?
Something's got to be done.
I got a couple comments, but I don't know whether I should say them or not. I think Glenn's got a good idea. I think he's got a great idea. He has had a good idea. One thing I'll say to Glenn, thank you for updating yourself on what this project's all about. You know, you and I had several discussions on this, and we needed to get that back and updated to where we're at the present time. And I think some of that is already being done. It's not from only the Columbia Basin Development League. Bureau, Irrigation District, are already working a lot on this project. That's why the siphon number 2 is being in place, because that is going to take care of portion of this to get it started. And I think it will continue as that portion gets started and completed. I think it will continue. But we still have to do, like you say, man, is to keep pressure on them to keep this thing going. Over the time when this project was started, they figured it'd take somewhere around 70 years to complete. We've been into it for almost 60 years now, and we're half done with it. So, like I say, we've got to speed up this process to get the thing completed in the next 10 years.
Can you imagine if the President of the United States may put this at the top of his public works agenda? What kind of force that would bring to the project? He would be rubber stamping it. When he told the Bureau, if he told the Bureau of Reclamation to put this project in, and he would cite an executive order to do so, mm-hmm. it could cut off years and years of development.
Yeah, I'm not against what you're doing. I'm just saying I'd like to see them on board with you, because they've really been the driving force. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's just what I'm saying. It just seems to me if you have them running also, because they already have the state behind them. There's a lot of federal people that know about them, you know. And you get all that going for you. I think it'll make it happen even quicker. So you'll have more people pushing with you. So.
On the other issue, the solid waste and your steam, one time I used to be able to go to a chalkboard and I could give you the thermal equation to build the boiler and stuff. I haven't done it for many years, so I'm kind of cold. But if you could give me the basic steam requirements that you're looking at for these project proposals, I think I can dig in my memory bank and come up with an answer. There are other alternatives here other than gas. And if you'd be interested in it, I'd be, I didn't know you were going to talk about it. I didn't want to walk in here. I'd be willing to contract with you. I think I can show you how to get free transportation disposal just like I did years ago. I actually did negotiate the contract for Adams County years ago. And I had $97 million worth of funding in place and stuff. I know how to jump the financial hurdles. Well, so if you're interested, I'd be more than happy to work with you under some type of business arrangement. So.
Well, if you want to call the city, we'd be interested in hearing what you have. I mean, you know, we're all open-minded here. If that's something that might work in our area, I mean, we definitely want to start looking into it because we have to solve this problem. So
I took the proposal to the commissioner, but they didn't have an interest in it. And I think that with at least one of the commissioners, he lost a very large farm many years ago, and he doesn't like getting into the ministry. He likes to stay in out of the eye of the hurricane. So I'd be more than happy to work with him.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, committee reports. We have any committee reports? So we met one more time with the judicial, and we gave the proposal that you told us to give to the commissioners. And it sounds like they're going to be returning with a proposal back to us. It sounds like they accepted our proposal for the most part. And they're going to come back. I think they're trying to gather together a increase, you know, or something so that they're not just sitting there at one price. So we'll be seeing that, I think, in the future for our budget because we told them we need to have that for our budget. So it sounds like they're going to go for the $20,000 increase? What was it? What did we offer them? I can't remember. 15. 15 and then a 10. Correct. So they sounded interested in that. So that was good to see. They saw our point also. We see theirs also too. Mark, did you remember any other things that were discussed? Oh, we talked about adult probation. One thing that came out of that, that somebody mentioned, it takes about 2 years roughly to where it starts paying for itself more or less. Since I don't really know, that was talked a little bit. But other than that, anything else comes to your mind?
That's about it.
Yeah. I think we believe where we're at on that one, so. Anybody else? We talked about a lot of the committees tonight already, so. Okay, unfinished business. New business? Okay, then this meeting's adjourned.
Mayor's announcement.
Thank you, Raymond. The next Teamster Union Negotiating Committee meeting is scheduled for September 29th at 9 o'clock. Committee members Kaler, Darrow, and Deaver. Okay. We'll meet a half hour before at 8:30 for the city discussion. Please be prepared for the meeting to last at least till 12 o'clock noon. Number 2, City of Othello audit begins Monday, September 20th. They plan to complete the financial audit and then come back to complete the accountability audit around the second week of October. ACDC meets this Thursday at September 9th in Ritzville at 6. And is the Centennial meeting still on? Okay, the Centennial meeting in the police department at 4:30. If you're interested in going to that one. Now this meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Don't we?
That's a little late.
log out. Okay. Shut down.
Now what is this?